up, you're the CIA man, right?
I grew up in that world.
Can you ever stop working for them?
Yes, I became head of Secret Council 10 in February, March 88.
Yeah,
I disbanded the Secret Council 10 in 1990. And there hasn't been any world authority since then. And that's
right.
When the computer world took over, the Android meme. That's a reflection of Rai returning to the plane of essence. Rai is the principalities of authority. And there isn't any of that, of any permanent structure like most of history anymore. That's
right.
Remarkable. And so because the masses always live in the past, you have nothing but people studying the Illuminati and the Rai principle, you know, all over the internet, right when
uh-huh.
it's not there anymore. It's your generation that got into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we grew up people being able to spew whatever they want, wherever they want, all over the internet, instantly,
yeah.
right? But now
yeah.
we believe everything and don't believe anything at all.
No, let me tell you this. The experience you have on the internet is you can go and look at any kind of point of view. Well, Bob Marshall and I presented that on International Connection and the other radio show in the 80s. We were the first to present different ways of looking at the Illuminati and other things without us representing any particular point of view. No one had ever done that before
yeah.
other than McLuhan. Everybody comes on and presents their information. They might have a magazine and present all kinds of different articles in the magazine, but they themselves have an agenda. They represent left,
yes.
right, center, or anarchist. We were the first
yeah,
to be detached. We were not trying to teach anybody anything. We were not trying to propagandize. We were just showing the memes that were around that you would
right.
learn to juggle.
When did you guys stop Tetrad managing the planet?
Definitely by the 80s.
That would have superseded all the Illuminati stuff, so the Illuminati stuff was obsolete before then.
See, that's one of the things. It's a philosophical explanation, or answering that question is a chart. You've got the real Tetrad management in the 19th century, 1840 to 1900, and that's under monad conditions, printing press conditions. And that's when all the royal families of Europe were intermarrying, okay? So that's a pretty tight circle. McLuhan called it the charm circle. They were in the interval. They weren't really tied to any nation, so they made huge bucks off the wars between nations. Their royal setups were put on. Like the Queen and her ancestors, Queen Victoria, weren't representing the British people really. They represented the whole family network. Some people like to call it the bloodlines. So that was actual Tetrad management, where the leaders are not really identifying with the information they're putting out. So they're lying. A Tetrad manager lies, right? The first
okay.
version of Tetrad management, which is the first thing that people understand, is like McLuhan said, people think that if he spoke about something, that he was for it. Most people think when you start talking about something that you're for it or against it. They do not understand that people can talk about it like actors. And so the political powers in the 19th century were actors. They were pretending to speak English, German, and pretending to represent the people. But they weren't. They were just working for their own little tribe. That's the simple 19th
yeah.
century. When you come into World War I with airplanes, radio, telephones, and cars, it gets a little more complicated. And then you've got to figure out how you're going to manage your 19th century monad or tight group. How are they going to manage a society where the technology is getting out of control? So a lot of the historical families of the 19th century lost out in World War I. The Austrian-Hungarian Empire goes out. Remember, the war begins by shooting one of the heirs to the throne, or the king,
yeah.
Ferdinand, I think his name was. So here we have in the 20s, the oligarchy is trying to keep the 19th century way of a small group managing the whole continent. And it doesn't work, because the radio environment is creating a whole new effect. And it's actually providing wealth and entertainment and information that people didn't have to buy. It was relatively free. So you see the oligarchies collapse completely. The first part of my chart, 1840-1900, that level of Tetrad management collapses by 1930. And then what happens in the 30s, money becomes public property, and you have the secret brain trusts or technocrats taking over and managing society. They do it with FDR, they do it with the leaders in France and England, they do it with Hitler, they do it with the Soviet Union and China. So that would be the next level of analog media. That would be the next level of Tetrad management, not just modulating money. Money is not the thing you're controlling and trying to make profit from. You're modulating the radio environments. And you actually know that the medium is the message. As long as people got radio and cars and stuff to buy, they're not going to topple you, you being the secret oligarch. So that's what happens in the 20s and 30s. So the medium is the message is the ruling principle, and Wyndham Lewis wrote about this. He wrote a book in 1926 called The Art of Being Ruled, where he explained what I'm telling you. And McLuhan learned that from Wyndham Lewis. Then you have, at the end of World War II, you got the atomic bomb, which then makes war pretty hard to pull off. So it gets even more complicated in the post-World War II phase. So on my chart, I say that by 1960, you have no more tetrad managers. But there were people still trying to do it because they didn't understand what else to do. But the Android meme is going to sneak up on everybody between 1960 and 1990, and that's the digital environment. And it's going to come alive and be the image of the tetrad manager. That's what the pentad manager is. It's technology coming alive and pretending that tetrad management is the way to understand and control society. Now, it's normal awareness among baby boomers and Generation Xers. They go to university. They learn. That's why they don't agree with fanaticism. They wouldn't agree with that guy, Ron, on the last hour, trying to, you know, worry about capital. People understand today, they say it's a very complex society. And they sit around despairing about what to do, but they recognize it's a complex society. People didn't recognize it was a complex society 100 years ago. They thought they were a little person, lived in a town, they were part of a country, they had a national identity, and they defended their country against other countries. The average kid, you know, by the 70s and 80s, understands, and that's the root of a lot of Second City and Saturday Night Live humor. It's making fun of people trying to run the show and looking like idiots. They're making fun of the first phase of tetrad management.
So when the tetrad managers were at odds with one another, I suppose competing for their own self-interests up to the point when the Android meme becomes more pervasive than their capacity to tetrad manage the planet at all.
Right. I would say that the death of the tetrad manager, the crisis at the leading edge of it is the Kennedy assassination. I mean, that was a big mistake for the authorities to do that under TV conditions. And in the long run, it just made the population hugely cynical. But they had an identity crisis. And as you moved in, when the satellite came in with Sputnik in 57 to 63, now this whole environment is going around the planet. And the world government guys, who are the first level of tetrad managers, they're trying to become solar managers, and they don't know how to do it. And on top of that, Kennedy becomes a very charismatic image on TV, and he's charismatic just because of his image, not because he's wealthy, not because he killed a lot of people. And the old tetrad managers had power based on murdering people and the old ways of controlling territory. So here's this software image taking over. It put Rockefeller and everybody into a crisis.
Their last gasp for power is to kill Kennedy.
Yeah, they almost like had a tantrum. Well, we'll show that guy. We'll show you can't get on TV and be popular. Well, we run the chemical body. We're going to kill his chemical body. So they offed him, and the United States never recovered from the ongoing discussion of who did what to who.
So when does Xenocrity begin in your life, Bob?
It actually happened unconsciously, and I write about this in Up the Arc of Vanity, which I wrote in 95 or so. When I was assigned to investigate McLuhan in late 53, early 54, because he was exposing the principle of the medium is the message, which the old tetrad managers that my father worked for, they understood that, and that was the secret. Here's McLuhan, because he knew Wyndham Lewis, was exposing it in his journal explorations in 1953, 54. So I was sent over to find out who this professor was. And as I got to know him, I found out that Wyndham Lewis was the guy that turned him on to all this stuff. Well, Wyndham Lewis was a friend of my father's. It's only a retrospect, but when I think back, isn't this interesting? My boss sent me over to find out who was McLuhan influenced, and he was influenced by my uncle, so to speak. I mean, Wyndham Lewis being a close friend of my father, it was that close. Now, I didn't recognize that then, but now in retrospect, going away, I said, yeah, that was my first Xenocrity, that a guy close to my father was the secret that they were trying to find out about how McLuhan figured this out. So that was the beginning. But for me, the first Xenocrity where I would talk about in public was when Nelson Thal, who met me in 1983 in Toronto, after a couple of years, one day he watched the Blues Brothers. And he said, fuck, those guys dance like you, Bob. So he had seen me dancing somewhere. So I looked at it and I said, shit, yeah, look, they're fucking dancing my moves. And I had not really noticed it. I'd seen the movie. And that was the beginning And it wouldn't have stayed with me, but then all it started to pile up once I was on the radio. Then Twin Peaks happened. And it had actual photographs of artifacts in our home in the fucking movie, you know? Right. And so it really started to speed up from between 85 to 90. And I didn't coin the term until the late 90s.
But by 1990, the Android meme is no longer running the show without any Tetrad management going on, because once it starts focusing on you, you then become the Tetrad manager for the whole show, because it's configuring itself around your moves.
That's right. You see, the Android meme, it's come alive. It's trying to look as unmachinic as possible, trying to look like a human. So how does it determine which human to look like? So it took me as a high standard. Okay, here's one of the smartest humans. Okay, now we know what he knows. Now we can work to dumb down our what we're going to present ourselves. We have a standard of what we don't want to look like. We don't want to be that smart, so we look dumb. So they use me as a standard to move against, to get lower than. Now, here's the thing. In this interview we just played, well, I'm talking in the previous hour about AP. I'm saying the AP's invading this, and I just say it once, anthropomorphic physical. That's the category in my part of the tiny note chart. The AP is the beginning of people becoming bigger than the media. Once the 90s starts to shrink the media, no one had ever been in a media environment where they were bigger than it. But the Android meme makes you feel that you're bigger than the media because you had a computer in 95, 96 where you could go and look at magazines, newspapers, and movies, and all these things that in their day, in the 30s of movies, in the 40s of radio, in the 19th century in the printing press, you were inside these huge environments. The communication environments were bigger than the citizen. But as they shrunk, it made the human say, well, I'm bigger than it. Well, what is the I that's bigger? And they might look at their body and say, well, this body, I'm retrieving my chemical, physical body. It's more powerful than the media. But that's an illusion. That's not really what the AP is. But humans thinking that they are something that is not the media, that is not the animals, it's something separate, that basic split of electricity, that's the AP. And so people can more and more say, I can stand on my own 2 feet now. I'm not subject to these huge environments. The politicians don't run the show anymore. Money doesn't run the show anymore. I just got to survive somehow.
That's, of course, an illusion.
That's an effect of the Android meme.
When the Android meme started modeling itself after you, did you feel at that point that you were consciously reassuming your role as Tetrad manager, or were you just noticing that it was modeling itself after you and looking to see what was going to happen?
The Android meme was the Tetrad manager. It would put on the image that it was doing that, and so I knew it was just an image, that there couldn't be a Tetrad manager, so I didn't take it seriously what it was presenting. I mean, I announced in 1990 on CKLN, I say, actually write it in 95. I say, Carol and I were the first to reappear, and we are going to bring forth new energy and new medicine. That's what I say. Now, who the fuck has the guts to say that? It's totally narcissistic, solipsistic fucking megalomania, right? We're the first to reappear in the new reality. But I had the guts to do it, and I knew what I meant technically. It was like a technical statement. I made a press conference. Hey, I discovered this. My awareness is the first to reappear. And cold fusion is a harbinger of that. The medical technology Carolyn was doing in New York were part of that. So I had the confidence to know that as an artist or scientist, I was miming what was coming. I didn't fully know it. And we just went to New York City, and Carolyn did her medicine, and I just carried on bugging people in different formats and that, and just waited it out. We waited basically from 1990 to 2008.
In your chart, do you consider that a hexad or pentad?
The chart goes up to the pentad, but it's about the hexadic view. So at the bottom it says, waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals have danced the hex advertisement. So I take the word hexad and merge it with advertisement. So the chart is an ad. So who's waiting for organic bodies? Carolyn. And she's looking at all that the patriarchy or men or previous societies tried to do under right conditions, and she's looking at where it ended up. It crashed. And I was the last male that she could talk to that represented that, and I was like the bridge between all that humans and men had done to the new world, which was going to come, but we didn't know what it was. And so the chart, I've always said, is what Carolyn sees when she looks back at what was. So she's looking at it from the hexadic position, and ion is the coming forth of the hexadic, moving us toward the octad. That's what ion says. And it's looking back at the monad, dyad, triad, tetrad, pentad levels. So the chart is the mirror image of what it was, with like the deepest explanations of the forces that made it be a conditioned situation for 2,000 years, you could say.
So would you say it's only use anymore as an explanation for how we got to where we are?
It has no use now, the chart, other than you get blissed out in RNA drops. After all, you get used to it, and then you look around and say, what can I do? I want to have something to read. So you look at the chart. It's something to engage your mind about how you got here. It's like a map of how you got here. It's a souvenir from a ritual in progress was the old title. And it's just something to occupy your mind a little bit. It's not relevant anymore. Young people, they go to school to find out how they got to where they are. Well, I got the ultimate university course. This is how you got there. And it takes a lot to understand it, to believe it, but it's getting easier to prove it now. So it's there to engage the mind to the degree the mind requires engagement. And people do. There's always downtime. There's always people sitting around, they're basking in the glory and they want to do something. So they read a book or make something or do something. Well, my course is something to do to occupy the mind around visual space. That kind of hemisphere retrospective.
And four of the quadrants are holopathic radio, holopathic TV, holopathic...
Radio, so TV, computer, and satellite.
So it's satellite radio, satellite television, TV. Satellite computer,
yeah,
and satellite squared.
Yeah, it's all satellite, because satellite is the last analog technology. It's the final extension of humans. It's not an extension of our body parts, inner or outer. It's an extension of the planet itself, because it's a little thing you can live in. You go off the planet, and you can live in this little planet called a rocket ship or a satellite or a spaceship, and it floats around the planet or goes out to the moon or something. That's the final extension. After that is the Android meme starts extending itself, and that's the digital era. The digital era doesn't extend any of our body parts. It extends machines.
What does that mean for us?
Here's what it means. The left hemisphere, or even the mind, likes to see a pattern of order and symmetry. Slower cultures worship these images of symmetry and order, and have made religions out of it, or made great artists out of it. We don't have to have it last that long. It's like a belief is something you've been thinking a long time. Well, a beautiful pattern, a piece of art painting or a canvas of something or a movie is just a short thing for enjoy for 2 hours and then you forget about it. So my stuff is there to enhance your old sense of symmetry and beauty. There is a, quote, an order to the unfolding of getting here. There used to be an article on McLuhan, a guy wrote it in the 60s, he called it, Which Way Did the Second Coming Went? He thought McLuhan was saying the second coming had arrived, and he was telling us how it arrived and which way it went. So that's which way did Dobbstown went? That's what my charts show. It's for conversation.
Is there going to be an election?
The last election was in 96. In 2000 was not an election. The Supreme Court, they intervened and stopped it, and the Supreme Court made a decision. So that was like tetradic intervention right there, right in front of everybody.
Yeah.
But it was an afterimage of it, because there's no real power in the White House. So there's not been elections in 1996, maybe even 92. I don't think Dole was much of a competitor against Clinton. And you had to get to 2000, you know. So just, you get a guy in there in 92 and then get to 2000, because the whole millennial fantasy had to be triggered and completed. And YTK was part of it. A lot of the Western Christian culture, when nothing happened, they spent the next 5 or 6 years up to 2006 saying, what the hell is this for? And Second Coming didn't happen. Where are we? You know, and then religion fell away. And then the lesbian and gay guys took over TV, and right-wing Christians lost the culture war. There's always rearguard actions. But, okay, so we had an election. Now, it's really interesting what happened in 2008. It was time to have a new kind of image. Because the AP of George Bush was just, like, ridiculous. It couldn't really have any...
You couldn't even believe it
if
that was real.
That was under the dark side. So what do? You bring in a black guy to represent the light side. So you redo the AP, you redo Bush with a impossible scenario where a slave kid comes in and didn't even fucking been in politics for 5 minutes. You know, had been a state senator for a few weeks. But the image was so important. And it was the last gasp of charisma. And what's really great about Obama, whether he knows it or not, is that he exhausted charisma. Now people know they're on their own. They know there's no point in looking even at the election. There's nothing there, nothing going on over there.
Like,
the garbage men they have running, they're all obviously insane people. You know, they're not even decent human beings. They're ridiculous. And so most of the population will not pay attention. So there can't be another election. The White House has no relevance to a country where municipalities are going bankrupt all over the country. And the federal government can't help them. You're going to have a fucking incredible revolution, civil war, all mixed up. It's going to be crazy. A large part of the population is doing porn.
It's the only industry that I see that has any... I mean, still it's free, though, because you can get offline. I don't even know how it's still operating. I think it's just the fleshlight. The only thing that's really making, I think, profit for them is the toys.
Right, because you go on there, there's couples or people screwing constantly, new footage. Who's doing it? Where are all these people coming from?
And like, you know, and all of a sudden you like you just see all these new girls, and they're all beautiful. A lot of them are getting even more beautiful by the minute. You know, you look in the 90s and 80s and 70s. Yeah. I mean, you had the hot ones, but then you had, you know, the randoms. And now, like, they're all hot. I'm like, what happened to society where all the hot girls, I mean, they used to go to the rich guys. Now they got to perform to make money.
It's ionic. Everybody's just following their bliss. And, you know, there's all kinds of college parties. There's everybody's fucking everybody all over the place. They've got four or five bodies. And the chemical body doesn't rule anymore. Morality, or it's just not a big deal. So everybody purposely insults their body or plays with it or flaunts it because it's a minor thing. You know, they're fucking somebody, but they're also checking their email all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's true. I just feel like that's what's happening now. Like, everyone is to the point where there was so much do's and do nots, and now it's like, just pretty much you said, like, the 2000, once they hit, a lot of people start to realize, like, all that world, you gotta, you know, be as holy as possible so when God comes, we can be worthy to be in his kingdom. And now they're like, wait a minute, that's not coming, and most importantly, they got bills piling up, you know, rapidly. Mm-hmm. I'm losing my home, and now everyone is like, oh, fuck it, it just go for it.
See, you said, when you heard me, it made sense. It's like McLuhan said in the 60s, people need concepts to get a grip on reality. But McLuhan's message was also how concepts weren't as important as percepts. But he recognized that people would think he was doing concepts, so he said, people need concepts. My chart, what I did on the radio show, was just providing people a good explanation when they required it. But you run around looking for it, your mind wanted it, and then you saw my stuff and you considered it, and then you say, yeah, that's about the best sense I'm going to get ever. That's about it. And then that satisfies the puzzling of the mind, and then you can get on with your life a little bit.
Wherever you go, there you are. So you have to learn how to get over that. I think that's when RNA drops really come in and kick ass, because it really helps you, like, relax and say, wait a minute. Everything is great. You know, I'm going with the flow, and it's taking me on the current that I want to go on. If I don't want it, I guess it's not my universe.
It's actually making you become consciously eternal, to remember what it's like to be and know you're eternal every moment, so then you don't even need to eat, hardly. All that I said would make, to me, would not mean anything unless something like Ion happened. I didn't know Ion would happen. But to come up with the RNA products, which Carol and I did, I say that Ion is the greatest invention ever. So I can take credit for inventing it. But JW told me a year later that he would never have allowed me to fuck with his mind, because I thought I was trying to get the evergreens and talk to the ghosts that are gathering around him. He never would have let me do it unless Carolyn was there. So Carolyn's an important part of it. She didn't activate it. She just went along and, oh, Bob's got another crazy thing. He's going to do something with JW. You know, let's just watch this. But it turned out that it was important that she was there, so she was important. It was a triangle. JW, me, and Carolyn pulled off the greatest invention. If this stuff keeps unfolding the way it is, that's what it is. It's a completion. I find it really hilarious. I mean, if there are any of those sub-genius guys listening, they would say, look at Bob, he's still fucking claiming he's doing this and that. And they can't even pay attention enough to notice that people are getting affected by the RNA drops. They think that JW's in jail. And they say, Bob, you and Carol are going to jail soon because you're fucking connected to him. They think we're going to jail because they think he's in jail, and we somehow are connected to him, just because his name's on Carol's patent. This is the resistance. Very interesting watching the blinders, the refusing to recognize what's happening. And they don't have the guts, unless they secretly do it, to listen to this show or last week's show and hear these testimonials of people, you know, having incredible things happen. That's what's really funny, is that the Church of Genius is a great prophecy of what we're doing, but they don't fucking agree with it. My chart is a chart of how the 99ers, you know, off themselves. That's you could say that's where the meaning of the chart is. So thank you, guys.